Thank you.
The January 28th session of the Portland City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Fish.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge and ask you to join me in a moment of silence for the victims and those injured in the recent shootings downtown. I'd ask you to spend this time in silence, in meditation or prayer for those that are injured and for the families of the survivors. I also want to say that Police Commissioner Dan Saltzman and Police Chief Rosie Sizer and the entire team have done a great job trying to make sense of what is a just horrific and heartbreaking and ultimately senseless crime. So if you'd please join me in a moment of silence. Thank you. Carla, would you read item number 58?
Yes. The 2009 Portland Jazz Festival presentation.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. Pleased to welcome the Portland Jazz Festival team that's here to give us a quick preview of what will be happening between February 13 and February 22nd. This council in the past has been very supportive of the Portland Jazz Festival. As you know, there was some question about whether the festival would be held this year. Portland Jazz Festival lost a sponsor and was at risk of either being discontinued or worse, being poached by another city. Thanks to a lot of folks in our community who stepped up and said that this is an important institution and should remain here. And thanks in particular to Alaska Airlines and Horizon Air, who signed up to be a prime sponsor and put substantial money on the table. I'm pleased to report to you that the Jazz Festival will go forward. And this is not just any jazz festival this year. We are, as a community, going to be honored by having a celebration of the 70th anniversary of Blue Note Records. And this is a big deal nationally and will mean that a lot of people will be coming to our community to celebrate this event, which, as we'll hear from Tracy, on behalf of our hospitality industry is a big deal. But if you love jazz, and I know many of us do, this is really a big deal. So I'm pleased to introduce the folks who are making this possible, and they're going to give us a brief update on the Portland Jazz Festival.
Welcome to City Council.
Thank you so much. We're pleased to be here. My name is Sarah Balin Smith. I'm co-founder and board president for the Portland Jazz Festival. I wanted to take this opportunity amongst all of the board members as well as staff and the community to thank the council for your support in our efforts with the Jazz Festival. Without it, we wouldn't be here today. The mission of the Portland Jazz Festival is to present world-class jazz, foster educational opportunities for jazz students, and play a leadership role in the region's cultural tourism initiative. In 5 short years, we were voted one of the top 5 jazz festivals in the country by the Jazz Journalists of America. This year, we've been selected as the site for the celebration of Blue Note Records' 70th anniversary. That is a huge honor. We are the only festival in the United States selected for that honor. It's because of the work that we've done in these past 5 years that we're able to bring out Blue Note executives, their CEO, head of production, marketing, PR, as well as 12 headline concert artists, all of them previous Blue Note record artists or currently on the label. Additionally, those journalists that have helped us in the past do come back and will be here this year. We'll have journalists from throughout the country, from New York, Santa Barbara, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, and Seattle, that will be here to take a look at the city, this festival, and to report back and say what a fantastic job that we have done, because it's going to be such a fantastic year. There are a number of shows that I hope you don't miss, and one of them will be opening night with a trumpeter, internationally celebrated trumpeter, Terrence Blanchard. He will be bringing his Grammy Award-winning group that was, they were just nominated for a Grammy Award for the Best Large Instrumental Recording of A Tale of God's Will, A Requiem for Katrina. I think it's only fitting that for this the opening night of this festival and Blue Note, to acknowledge the efforts that Portland did in the wake of Hurricane Katrina and additionally the Portland Jazz Festival. McCoy Tyner will also be performing on the first weekend of the festival. He's an NEA jazz master and the last surviving member of the John Coltrane Quartet. You will see me at both of those concerts. The second weekend will be Cassandra Wilson, an amazing vocalist with a bluesy and sultry voice and Grammy award-winning. She has an album up for Grammy this year. The structure of the festival this year has 12 headline concerts, but you don't have to buy a ticket to come to the festival. You can attend free of charge to the PDX Jazz Pavilion. This is a 6,000-square-foot heated tent that sits in Pioneer Courthouse Square the first weekend of the festival. It's an exclusive stage for regional student ensembles, big bands, trios, and quartets. This year's student groups hail from Beaumont Middle School in Portland, Lake Oswego, Oregon City, Beaverton, and Gresham, as well as an Oregon All-Star Band presented by the Oregon Jazz Education Association. In addition, we offer free workshops to students of all ages. There's a trombone workshop, if you play trombone, trumpet, as well as one for the rhythm section that are all presented at the Portland Center for Performing Arts. We offer jazz conversations with Blue Note executives as well as artists. The number is long. There's almost a dozen. We go into middle schools and present The Incredible Journey of Jazz, which is the history of jazz as it relates to the African-American experience. We will go to the Inzawood Middle School, Whitford, Hosford, as well as Self-Enhancement Institute. We also offer nearly 80 free performances throughout the weekend in which people can attend. These are, majority of them are available for all ages. We have partnerships with a number of cultural organizations within the city that we help present and promote their work. That includes the Oregon Symphony, Northwest Film Center, SEI, Northwest Children's Institute, Jazz Society of Oregon, Creative Music Guild, and the OHSU Brain Institute is doing a special concert for us this year. We partner with hotels, restaurants, clubs, and brew pubs to encourage people to go out and take up the best that the city has to offer. I'm here today to ask the council to please make sure and reach out to your constituencies and encourage them to buy tickets. As a presenting arts organization, it is the most important time for us 2 weeks out to encourage people to buy tickets and to understand the value that the Portland Jazz Festival brings to Portland. Thank you.
I'm Barbara Steinfeld. I'm with Travel Portland. I'm the Vice President of Tourism, and I'm also the Vice President of the Board for the Portland Jazz Festival. I'm here to focus on the economic impact to the community from this event. It started specifically 6 years ago as a cultural tourism event in order to bring people into Portland from outside the area so that they would spend their money here and to go to our hotels during a need time in February when traditionally, the hotels were not completely full. And this year especially, it becomes more important than ever. In 2007, the economic impact of this event was about $1,322,000 on the community of Portland, and the hotel rooms generated were about $2,000 in 2008, in last year. And that's only 1 year out of five. So if we multiply that more or less by 5 years, we see what an important event this is to the city. It not only focuses the media on us, and even though a lot of people locally might not know about it, nationally, this event is really well known and puts a spotlight on Portland and brings people here. So we at Travel Portland have been working with this event for 6 years in order to market it and get people here, and we've successfully done so, and it's a very important event to us and to the city, and I'm just here to put the focus on that.
Good morning, Commissioners. Tracy Marks, General Manager of the Hilton Portland and Executive Tower. I really just want to reiterate what Barbara has pointed out, how important it is, not just for the hotel community, but all the restaurateurs and all the retail. We get thousands of people that come in from Northern California and from the Seattle area, come visit our city. They spend money throughout the city, and particularly now in a very difficult economic period for all of the Portland hotels, this becomes a really important event where we can keep all of our people working, hopefully have all of the visitors come to the wonderful restaurants that we have here to offer in the city, and spend some money in our retail as well. So thank you very much. I personally wanted to thank Commissioner Fish in a dark and difficult period for us. He was able to get some other stakeholders together and reach out into the community and help us and also assist in getting us financially viable again. But as Sarah just said, unless people buy tickets, you know, we're only a couple shows away from not being viable. So I encourage everybody to come see all the wonderful events and continue to support what I think is a great event for the city of Portland. Thank you.
Can I say one more thing? Commissioner Fish asked us to say which event to go to, and even though Sarah brought out the big ones, I'm going to be at John Schofield.
So where do you purchase tickets at, and how much are tickets?
Thank you very much for your question. Tickets are available at pdxjazz.com, all Ticketmaster outlets. You can call 228-JAZZ for any additional information.
There's also a brochure that that has all the listings. And where can people get this brochure, Sarah?
They're available at most of your libraries, coffee shops throughout town, as well as, of course, the Travel Portland Visitor Center in Pioneer Courthouse Square.
And the website.
And the website is pdxjazz.com.
Mayor, if I may, a unique public-private partnership came together to make this happen. And again, I'd be remiss if I didn't just acknowledge the honor roll of people. Travel Portland, that provided their expertise, some bridge financing. The hotel industry that has stepped up big time. Sho DiZono stepped up and brought his skills. Sarah Smith, you are a saint in what you've done. And I just want to personally acknowledge all your efforts above and beyond. This would not be happening, in my judgment, without your leadership. To a board that has confidence in this organization, is willing to take some risks. I'm grateful we live in a community that has a KMHD. You know, most cities don't have a jazz radio, a dedicated jazz radio station. And they have been promoting this event. And I want to just close by saying that it's almost impossible to pick an event for this event because they're all of such high quality. Mm-hmm. But I did want to emphasize that for those who love the local jazz scene, because when we do have some outstanding international talent coming here, and it's a big deal to be honoring the 70th anniversary of Blue Note, and it's a who's who of world-class talent, but you can also catch the people who make us proud here locally. So I'm going to be making an effort to see Devin Phillips and his concert, and Devin moved here right after Katrina, and he has made Portland his home, and we're grateful for that. I'm going to go see Charlie Stanford. And for those of you who don't know Charlie, recent graduate of Grant High School, son of Phil Stanford, and one of the great young jazz talents in our community. I'm going to go see Dave Frischberg. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it's hard to see Dave Frischberg these days. He's a headliner in New York City, and he's going to be performing here in his home city. Rebecca Kilgore, Mel Brown, we can go down the honor roll. But we have such a wealth of talent here. And it's great for Portland that our talent and the international talent comes together. And it's also great that you have made this commitment that so many of these events will be free to the public so that high school students, middle school students, lovers of jazz can take part in this. But we are hoping people do buy tickets so we can continue to keep this here. So thank you for your good work.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Fish, for your leadership in helping this survive. I think it's also important to note that Commissioner Leonard, 2 years ago?
Yeah. 2 years ago.
Helped get the Jazz Festival where it is today, in part because of your leadership in a city grant as well. So this has definitely been a great team effort on council, and we're very supportive. It's a great thing for the city. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That moves us to the time. Before we get to the time certain at 10 a.m., we need to consider the consent agenda.
Thanks. I'd like to pull item 69.
And do you want that heard on the regular agenda?
Well, I think we probably have time before 10 a.m. Yep. to actually have it heard, if you don't mind.
Okay, so let's do the consent agenda, and then we'll hear item number 69.
Thank you.
Any more polls?
Any other polls? Anyone else wants to pull an item from the consent agenda item? All right.
Fish?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Let's hear item number 69.
Accept the report on budget notes, inspections plan, and apparatus replacement schedule.
Commissioner Leonard.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. This specifically what I wanted to have the opportunity to talk about was the budget note in the last approved budget, not that spoke to the apparatus replacement schedule, but rather the inspections plan. in terms of the commercial occupancies and residential occupancies that the Portland Fire Bureau undertakes. As those of you who have served with me the longest here know, I work very hard to be very constructive but still firm in my efforts to improve the bureaus under my assignments, under my responsibilities. But when they do something really, really good, I work just as hard to make sure they have the opportunity to talk about the really good work that they've done. In this case, as some of you will recall, last summer, there was a Oregonian article that was highly critical of the Fire Bureau's inspection schedules of commercial occupancies. And for those of us that are familiar with the really important work that the Fire Marshal's Office does, we understand that that could lead to some really tragic consequences to not have regular, thorough, and timely inspections. And although the Bureau at that time was under the leadership of Mayor Potter, I asked him, because of my familiarity with those processes and the importance of good inspections by the Fire Marshal's Office, if I could speak with then Chief Sprando and then Fire Marshal John Klum about it. So I went up and I met with them, and I was just immediately assured, as I probably should have been without even talking, that how seriously they took that article and how quickly they had assembled a plan to get into those occupancies and inspect them appropriately. What I've asked Chief Klum and now Chief John Knorr, who was selected wisely by Chief Klum to be our fire marshal, to do is come in and then give a more thorough explanation so that all of us can hear the excellent work they've done and what they're undertaking to make sure our citizens are safe from fire before a fire ever occurs by excellent fire prevention work. So Chief Plum, thank you for your leadership, and Chief Nord, thank you for your leadership on this, and the stage is yours.
Now, for the record, John Klum, Fire Chief, Portland Fire and Rescue. Thank you for the opportunity today. As you all know, that last spring, late spring, as at the, with the Oregonian article, it came to our attention on some past due inspections that we were aware of, that we were falling behind on inspections ever since the implementation of the company-based fire inspection program in late 2002. And what that program did is that it basically took half of the 40,000 inspectable occupancies in Portland and Portland area and gave them to the actual fire stations to accomplish. Though that group of inspection was the lower hazard inspections, they were your 7-Eleven type of occupancies, to where the firefighters are trained to go out there and try to mitigate and identify hazards. With that, with the information that came forward in spring, it brought to our attention that there were some buildings that were what we would consider a higher priority as far as life safety issues that had not been addressed for several years. So when that came to our attention at that particular time, we immediately took action, to where myself then as Fire Marshal and Chief Dave Sprando and then Deputy Chief Fire Marshal Tim Kelly, I as Fire Marshal directed the Prevention Division staff to do an internal audit on all outstanding inspections. And at that particular time, what we noticed is that we didn't have a clear method of and an easy way for our mid-level managers and our inspectors to actually have the information readily available on what the higher priority inspections were. So I asked them at that particular time to immediately go through and prioritize the occupancy classifications that we deemed were the most highest hazard. And those, for instance, would be your high-rise residential, especially the high-rise residentials that lacked automatic fire sprinklers, any of the large public assemblies, check for any institutions, which would be our hospitals and so forth, and then our education facilities, which are our local schools. So they went through that, and they identified which buildings needed to be addressed to immediately. And we broke away from what traditionally Portland Fire and Rescue has done for years and years, and that was we took an inspection approach geographically, to where we had a senior inspector with those district inspectors that were assigned to an individual geographic area within the city, and they managed manage their workload accordingly, regardless of what the rest of the city was doing. What we found is that wasn't the most efficient way of doing it, especially with the method of identifying these priorities building. So what we did is we took a task force approach. We took this group of the highest priority buildings, and they were directed to focus all their attention as a group to mitigate and get those not only the regular inspections caught up, but the 3% of the re-inspections that we were behind on. So with that, we also looked a little bit more in-depth of what we could do to make the mid-level managers and inspectors' jobs more efficient. And there's identified some improvements to Fires 2000, which is a comprehensive database that has all the building information. It's a great program. It has tons of information in it, but sometimes it was a little more difficult to get quick reports and queries and so forth to where we developed it, to where the senior inspectors would be able to manage their inspectors' workloads and build upon the highest priority inspections first type of approach. But what we've seen going through this restructuring of the prevention division is that it came more and more clear that we have some challenges still remain ahead of us. Because with the company-based inspections, with the companies, we're able to maintain the two-year inspection cycle. So in other words, the company's going out and they're doing the low hazards on a two-year cycle. But we're finding with available resources we were directed to do from Mayor Potter is to what we could do. What we're finding is that we'll be able to address the higher priority inspections on a two-year cycle. But when we get into the bulk of the medium inspections, is that we have to look at is what a realistic time frame is for those particular inspections, and then weigh that with the perception and the value of having the low hazards being done on a more regular basis than the middle hazard ones. So we're still trying to refine that, and Chief Norrell will give a little bit more background on that. So we've taken positive steps. I think that the information that came out last spring that we actually welcomed that because it had us to give us a focus on what we could do internally to increase efficiencies. And I think it's that we're a better division as a result of it. We still have more work to do to continue to get it where we can get the inspections on a reasonable rotation and what the expectations are into the public, and that'll have some downstream effects as far as how communications to businesses on when they can expect the inspectors to get into the lower hazard and medium hazard type of occupancies. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Fire Marshal John Norrell, and he'll give you the more specifics on the program.
Thank you, Chief Klum.
John Norrell, Fire Marshal for the city. As Chief Klum spoke of, The Deputy Chief Fire Marshal and myself, when I was assigned to the Fire Prevention Division in late June of last year, we got together with the senior inspectors, the team leaders for our inspection teams, and we looked at how we're doing business and how can we make that better moving forward. And as the Chief alluded to, we redesigned or laid out the city more in a geographical format. We're working in teams. The senior inspectors are can more easily delegate the inspections to all members of their team rather than people working in very specific districts. A couple other things that we looked at was a computerized model where we could have laptops in the field and people could do their data entry. There's a considerable amount of data entry that occurs with each inspection, and what usually occurs is when the inspectors arrive at work in the morning, they download their data or they enter their data from the day before. And that's usually from a hard copy form that most of them utilize. So we're looking at, can that information actually be entered in the field that can then be brought in the next morning, just dock the computer, all the information downloads, and they can be back out the door doing more inspections per day. So we're looking at better productivity there. We also looked at several ways of moving some of our priorities around within the Bureau. Looking at whether we bring people off the fire investigations unit to do some inspections, which then would leave us without the ability to inspect fires that have occurred. We have a very effective fire investigations unit that keeps our arson levels very low here in the city, so we didn't want to impact that. We looked at some other potential efficiencies, but most of them were not didn't work out as well, or we didn't perceive they work out as well as the ones that we've been implementing so far. Just a few numbers for you. Last year, when we started this April 1, since April 1, we have completed we've completed about 1,000 of 1,200 high risk or high priority inspections. So we're getting of the 1,200 that's due per year, or roughly 2,400 every 2 years. We're on a two-year inspection cycle. That's our goal. As the chief had said, we're nearly complete with our highs. We're moving through the mediums, and we're over halfway through with our mediums. Our lows, we're about halfway through. So as we move all these high priority inspections to the front of the line, which is appropriate to get them done, we're not quite getting to our lows there yet. But we are hitting the things that we've determined to be of the highest life safety risk to the citizens. That's the non-sprinklered residential high-rises, non-sprinklered high-rise business buildings, college dormitories, assemblies that sell alcohol, non-sprinklered clubs that sell alcohol. So we're hitting those, and as we move through that and get back on a schedule, we'll be moving through to get the mediums and the low priorities.
Thank you. More globally, that was a lot of information, and some might argue minutia. But what I would sum that up with for my colleagues here and the public watching is that a firefighter will tell you that the best way to prevent a person from becoming a victim in a fire is to prevent the fire in the first place. And that may sound trite, but we have a lot of data to back that up. And so what I found, if not surprising, refreshing about the Fire Bureau, that explains why Commissioner Fish grieves to this day of losing the Fire Bureau when I gained it, is all of the work that you did was not directed toward you from your commissioner in charge, nor did you react defensively, as some might, and hunker down and try to shoot the messenger. You welcomed the criticism. You identified what the shortcomings were. You created a plan of action, and you're implementing it. What a refreshing group of men and women to work with. So I appreciate what you've done.
Can I amplify that?
Yes.
And it is true, I'm still grieving. But I have been invited to a number of the events.
Well, I haven't seen those come across my desk.
They host. So. They ask me to keep it confidential. but I want to just amplify that because you're right. One of the reactions of the Fire Bureau could have been, well, if we step back and look at our inspection cycles and compare them to national averages, our inspection cycles are more aggressive than other jurisdictions. So one response could have been, well, it's a cheap shot because we're actually meeting national standards, just not meeting some more aggressive standards we set. And that wasn't the reaction. The reaction was, let's adhere to our standards, which are ahead of the national curve, which provide a greater measure of safety than other jurisdictions. Let's find a way to make it happen.
Thank you.
So that speaks to the culture that you've described.
I really appreciate you making that observation.
And I'll just link it to one other issue, which was there was an audit in the fall about controlled substances that we heard about. And it was an audit done by the auditor's office that concluded that there were no breaches of any of our safety measures, no inappropriate use of controlled substances, none of the kind of headlines that we see, sadly, in other jurisdictions. But rather than react and say, well, the cup's three-quarters full, why are we being called out to do more? Chief Klum and his team said, you know what, there are additional safeguards we can put in place to make sure that it never, never, never happens. And again, it speaks to the culture that you've referred to, and I believe it is in part why the public has such a high degree of confidence in the work of your new bureau.
So that's all by way of saying thank you to Mayor Adams again for this assignment. It has been a true pleasure, and I just wanted to give these two outstanding professionals the opportunity to sit here and explain what they've done to make sure they've gone above and beyond what normally other jurisdictions would do to make sure the public is safe from fire. So thank you, and thank you to the members for all our fire.
A couple questions?
Please do.
There's a statement in your report here that the Fire Prevention Division experiences several lengthy staff vacancies each year, which significantly impacts its productivity. Could you amplify on that?
Yes, there's a couple different factors, Commissioner. One is that it's one of the few areas that we in the fire where we kind of pride ourselves as being family friendly, and there's more frequency of FMLA leaves for 12 weeks. And the reason why that we run the vacancies in there is because we have a minimum of 6 weeks of training to get operations personnel up to the basic skill set, and it takes a substantial amount of time for them to get comfortable and efficient to go out and perform inspections. And so we don't have the ability just to take a person from operations or another division within Portland Fire and plug them into that seat to where they're effective as being an inspector, being able to recognize hazards and so forth. The other dynamic in there is it's one of the few places where our members with permanent restrictions can go to finish out a productive career within Portland Fire and Rescue. And what I mean by that is they have permanent restrictions that prevent them from doing operations work. And so those individuals have time loss recurrences associated with their conditions that can be from anywhere from a few days to several months, and those also create a vacancy. We did an internal report about employee availability, and what we did is we took to what we had as far as full staffing and then deducted out what would be normal for normal sick leave vacation use and used what as far as both the disability leave and FMLA. And the results shown that even though we have the funding for the full positions within the division, is that at best we're looking at about 65% to 75% at any given time of being up to capacity. And so that's what we mean by not at full capacity. And our inspection goals are based upon having 100% employee.
Okay, and then we had a council work session sometime, I believe it was last fall, maybe summer, about return to work opportunities in both police and fire. And I was very excited that you mentioned a program that you're putting together to bring back, I believe it was disabled firefighters, to do single family home, small multifamily inspections, although they're voluntary. I mean, the owner does not have to allow you to come in their door, but nevertheless, if they do, you can help do fire inspections, replace smoke alarms, and things like that. Is that moving forward?
Actually, yeah, but currently with we don't have anybody in the queue to go into the return to work positions. Those we have actually only one individual over there in prevention. The other members I was referring to actually did that on their own fruition and actually knew that that would be a career path to where they could be successful with Portland Fire. Actually took the recruitment, got the promotion to inspector, and have elected to finish out their careers there. So we have approximately, I don't know the exact numbers, but when I was fire marshal, we had 17 of those individuals. Then through your work with the return to work programs, was that we allocated another 8 low hazard inspections, and those positions are there available when FPR has someone that has been released from their physician saying that they're capable to do that particular skill set within that job analysis. But currently we only have one individual there, and they are producing good work for us.
So there are other positions available, though, if there are other return to work candidates.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Any other questions from council? Anyone in the room wishes to testify on the proposed improvements to the Fire Bureau's code enforcement program? All right, let's call the roll.
Fish?
Congratulations, Chief and Chief Noor, and job well done. Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you for pulling this from consent. This was really important for us to hear what you're doing and how city staff are working to improve the way that we provide services to citizens. I also appreciated in the report, which is only not only on the inspections but also on equipment replacement, how many different kinds of equipment you're looking at, the replacement schedule, and particularly everything from laptops in the field to the huge trucks and how often they're replaced. And I appreciated seeing how you had notes that you'll follow up to make sure that safety isn't being compromised and that the proposed changes are being cost-effective and saving taxpayers money. So, you know, things like replacing the trucks at 120,000 miles instead of 100,000 miles, that you're looking in every nook and cranny to see how we can do things better, and I appreciate that. Aye.
Leonard.
Well, I'd like to say that, John, you're just an exceptional fire chief, but the truth is that you're continuing a long tradition of excellent service in the city, and I would expect no less of you or Chief Norris. So I'm very, very pleased with your work and your commitment to the furtherance of the interest of the Bureau and the citizens that you serve. So I appreciate it very much. Aye.
Saltzman.
Thank you very much for following up on the budget notes and on this issue. Appreciate it. Aye.
Adams.
Excellent work. Thank you, and thank Commissioner Leonard for moving so quickly on this. Aye. All right, that gets us to item number 59.
Approve the appointment of members to the Citizen Review Committee associated with the Independent Police Review Division.
Auditor Blackmer.
Morning, Mayor, members of Council. Gary Blackmer, Portland City Auditor. The nine-member Citizen Review Committee is a key element of our successful oversight system in Portland. For example, they work with professional staff of my office to monitor police complaints, listen to concerns of the public, and develop strategies to deal with them, work with the Police Bureau to identify policy issues that need attention, as well as to follow up on its response to previous recommendations. We conduct appeal hearings and analyze and recommend improvements to oversight procedures. Two key characteristics that we seek from applicants are the willingness to commit the time to provide quality oversight and the ability to be fair and objective. We've succeeded because of the quality of CRC members, and I'm pleased to nominate the four persons under your consideration this morning. I think we have some excellent candidates, and I'll turn to Mary Beth Baptista to briefly describe the process and introduce the four nominees.
Thank you. I think we're trying to juggle some chairs here around. I just wanted to explain a little bit about the process in which we went through to recruit these four nominees. We definitely cast a wide net to try and find nominees to serve on this important committee. We sent out a public announcement that included a press release and a copy of the applications and instructions of how to apply. We're sent to approximately 75 media outlets, including the Asian Reporter, El Hispanic News, Mercury Tribune, OPB, Oregonian, and The Scanner. We also sent it to over 100 community and business organizations, including the Albina Ministerial Alliance, League of Women Voters, IRCO, which is the Immigrant Refugee Community Organization, COPWATCH, Hispanic and Sexual Minority Roundtables, the Business Alliance, Outside In, and the Oregon Advocacy Center, just to name a few. We also posted it on our website, IPR's website, and the auditor's website for 30 days. And we also invited each member of City Council and provided them with five applications for you all to make your recommendations for applications. The selection process was extensive. We received 21 applications for these positions. And they were reviewed by a selection committee consisting of two members of the community. One was Helen O'Brien. She is the head of victims assistance at the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, as well as Debbie Iona, who is of the League of Women Voters. One former and one current CRC member were also included, and myself and Auditor Blackmer reviewed the applications. Each application was reviewed and ranked, and the top six were invited to come in for interviews. The interview consisted of one of the community members, Debbie Iona, one of the former CRC members that was on the selection committee, and myself. After the interviews all were completed, we ranked all of the interviewees and identified the top four candidates. I think it's important to point out that we unanimously agreed on those top four. And we strongly believe that these individuals are best suitable for the CRC based on multiple factors, including the strength of interest, past experience in a related field, record of volunteerism, experience with diverse members of the community, and experience of being on a board. So the CRC term is for 2 years. They'll be sworn in this afternoon, but they'll begin their term on February 10th, and they will serve for 2 years, ending February 9th, 2011. So the nominees for appointment, the two new nominees are Barbara Anderson and Rochelle Silver. Ms. Anderson has lived in Portland since childhood. She has a degree from, oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Ms. Anderson has lived in Portland since childhood. She has a degree from Merrillhurst College in English Literature. She has an extensive experience being a volunteer, including experience with the SMART program, Dornbecker Children's Hospital for the Christmas cards, Lincoln High School and Jesuit High School PTAs. She was also a member of the discipline board of the Oregon State Bar. Ms. Anderson had a long career in retail sales before becoming a substitute teacher. She is a wife and mother of two adult children and was a delegate to Oregon's first district to the recent GOP convention in Minneapolis. She's a member of the Portland Garden Club, Ascension Episcopal Church, and the Daughters of Washington Pioneer. She lives in Portland, as is what was required of all applicants, or to be a business owner in Portland. And she lives with her recently retired husband. And I'm jealous to say that she's going to Hawaii in a week. excuse me. Ms. Silver holds a PhD from the University of Portland. Her career as a clinical psychologist, she had a career as a clinical psychologist. She served as chief psychologist for Damish, thank you, State Hospital, and for the Oregon State Hospital, as well as having maintained a part-time private practice in psychology. She was a member and chairperson of the Oregon Board of Psychologist Examiners and the Oregon Board of Private Investigators. Ms. Silver provides consultation and supervision to the Oregon licensed psychologist. She also volunteers or has volunteered with several organizations, including tutoring students in the SMART program in the Portland Public Schools, teaching English as a second language through Educatia, and acting as a certified long-term ombudsman for the state of Oregon, advocating for the rights of elders and others in the community, and living in long-term care facilities in the community. CRC members that were that are nominated for reappointment, they went through the same open recruitment as the rest of them, but these fine folks have already served on the committee. It's Michael Bigham and Llewellyn Robeson. Unfortunately, Ms. Robeson was not able to be here today. She had a commitment out of state that she could not change. And, you know, when we had three of the four, we had to see if we could get that. That's kind of a rare moment. So we took the opportunity. Michael Bingham is here today. He has served as the chair of the CRC. He's a retired Port of Portland police lieutenant. He went on to add a master's degree in fine arts and a degree to his master's in criminal justice. He also has a bachelor's degree in psychology. He volunteers with low-income housing residents, the homeless community, special needs individuals, and drug treatment programs. He's also a member of the Audubon Society and the Sierra Club. Ms. Robeson is also a current member and the clerk of CRC. And she's a retired port director for the U.S. Customs Service who volunteers with Multnomah County Library and her homeowners association. Ms. Robeson serves on the Bureau's Employee Information Advisory Council, as well as its Use of Force and Performance Review Board. She is a resident of Northwest Portland. So these are the nominees presented. And again, I am constantly amazed and consistently impressed by the professionalism and the hard work of this organization. And I know that Ms. Anderson and Ms. Silver are ready to roll up their sleeves and contribute. And so I would ask you to nominate them to the CRC.
Would you like to say a few words to council?
I'd just like to say that I'm looking forward to getting started, and I appreciate very much this opportunity.
Michael?
Yeah. Mr. Mayor and members of the council, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to serve the community again. Citizen oversight of law enforcement is essential in ensuring that the police maintain the highest standards of conduct and performance and are responsible to the needs of the community. Early last year, Ms. Luna Feuerbach issued her performance review of the CRC and the IPR. And although there was controversy over her findings and recommendations, at the very least, I think it prompted us to take a hard look at our own process and our goals. And we've worked hard to improve our process and goals. You'll be seeing a bias-based policing report coming out in a couple months that I think is very important. We issued an important report on towing and impound by police. We prompted the revision of the TriMet intergovernmental agreements for law enforcement. We're doing our own structure review, and that's chaired by Joanne Jackson. We participate on the auditor's use of force task force, and we're working hard on outreach. I'd like to thank you for your support and for this opportunity, and we look forward to working with you over the next year.
Ms. Tenet Anderson, would you like to say anything?
Just like what Rochelle said, I'm looking forward to serving and appreciate the opportunity.
Any comments from council? Well, I know I speak for everyone on council. This is a very, very important task you're taking on, and we are very grateful. Has anyone signed up? Thank you. Anyone signed up to testify on these new appointments?
Yes, we have 5 people signed up.
Thank you. You can turn to your seats. Please call the first 3.
First 3 are Ron Dean, I believe its last name is Jixleen, Adam Berg, and Stephanie Pierce.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council.
Thank you.
Please state your name, and you'll have 3 minutes, and you're, by council rules, required to stick to the topic before us.
Understood. Well, thank you again for the opportunity to speak. The council is about to appoint people to the Citizens Review Committee, and 1 week ago, I would have assumed these individuals to be the best for the job, but today I have some serious doubts. I think the mayor's actions have made it near impossible to take his word for any recommendations for employment citywide.
I'm happy to support your right to free speech, but we're here today to do the city's business, and so you need to stick to the your comments to the agenda at hand, which is about the appointment of these 4 individuals. If you have comments about these individuals, you can continue. Otherwise, I'll rule your testimony deleterious.
Respectfully, I do consider this city business, so we have that disagreement, and you can ask me to stop, and I will do so. I don't mean to in any way upset the work of the council.
Thank you.
Could you please tell me your name again?
My name is Adam Berg.
Thank you.
Ma'am?
Excuse me, Mr. Berg, do you have written testimony?
I'm sorry?
Do you have written testimony?
Yes.
I think, in fairness, why don't you submit it to the clerk so that if anyone wants to read it later, they can.
I will do so. Thank you, Councilor Fisher.
Thank you for the opportunity. The police union is involved in the citizen review process. If the police union, several commissioners, and both of Oregon's U.S. senators question Mayor Adams' fitness to lead, won't this negatively affect our effectiveness in the welfare of Portland?
Again, I respect your right to state your opinion, but this is...
I understand, sir, but...
This is the work of the city council, and I need you to limit your testimony to these appointments.
Okay, I just have one more comment. I'll bring it back to the issue at hand. As a parent, a former foster parent, and social worker, my concern is that with the police union not backing Mayor Adams, how am I supposed to feel comfortable with Mayor Adams going into Portland public schools and being an advocate for our kids? I have worked as a mentor. I have been the adult in that relationship. It is a tender relationship, and you have breached those boundaries.
Thank you. Did you have more to say about the appointments?
I do have another comment.
About the appointments?
I'm sorry, sir. Maybe I should be talking about the jazz festival since there are high school students involved. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Ma'am?
My name is Stephanie Pierce, and I live in Portland. I'm an artist, and I'm a graduate of Portland State University and Georgetown University Law Center. I'm a member of the New York Bar. And I thought that we were, I don't know, are we going to be given a moment of time to, on a different issue, or is this the only issue in which your fitness to lead as mayor of Portland is going to be addressed?
Any member of the public can sign up to speak to the council. You just go to the auditor's office.
Right, I did sign up. That's what I'm asking. I thought that was the issue I was signing up.
No, you sign up downstairs today for next council meeting, and you'll have 3 minutes to talk about whatever you want, and there are 5 slots at every council meeting. In order to make sure that the city's business gets done, I need to keep the testimony in fairness to everyone.
I understand, but I would like to add my comment as well that it would be a difficult issue that the fox is guarding the hen house if you appointed the people that are going to be overseeing the police.
Thank you. Appreciate your time today.
Because I don't feel you were fairly elected.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. And in the city council, it's been the rule that if you feel like you need to offer your support, you wave your hands like this so we can continue the city's business. Carl, the next 3?
Next 2 are John Price and Dan Handelman.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. You have, please give us your name, and you have 3 minutes.
Good morning. My name is John Price, and it was my understanding that I would be able to speak. And even though it was signed up on this topic, I'm not sure if I'll be allowed to make any sort of statement, but the question I have is if political ambition has really led us down this path to where we may be the subject of another Doonesbury cartoon. I don't think I have much more to say. I would like to hear the reason why you are choosing to stay in office.
Thank you for your testimony. Again, you have the opportunity to sign up for 3 minutes to talk about anything, but in order to keep the business of the city moving, we have testimony focused on each individual agenda item. Thank you. Dan?
Good morning, Mayor Adams. This is my first time testifying before this council, and I wanted to welcome Commissioner Fritz on board. I'm with Portland Cop Watch, and we are very glad to see all the media interest in the Citizen Review Committee this morning. We've been trying to get people to pay attention to this for years. So, the biographies that have been provided to the public are very thorough and interesting. What we wanted to know is why these individuals particularly wanted to be on the committee that oversees police misconduct allegations. And so, as in the years past, we requested copies of the actual applications, which I know you as council members are required by the ordinance to review, and I know you've seen these too. And so some of that information is actually in those applications, so we're glad to know some of the reasons. Another thing, one of the questions that comes up is, will they be neutral? Will they be able to see both the citizen's point of view and the police officer's point of view, which is very important. And I know as a group called Cop Watch, people think that we're biased, but we actually want to see the neutral people appointed to this board. For instance, we can see that Ms. Anderson, while it says that she was a delegate to the GOP convention, it also says that she was a pro-choice delegate, which isn't in her biography, which shows that she's able to buck the dominant paradigm. So that means to us a lot that somebody can see two sides of an issue. For Ms. Silver, apparently she's on the board of private investigators. I'm not sure what led her to that as a psychologist. Her previous employment experience was blacked out for reasons I'm not sure. So while it's important for people's privacy, we also think that the background of who's sitting on this board is important, and you know, perhaps that's something we can work out with the IPR office or with one of your offices later to find out more about them. This is also a good opportunity to remind the council members that you have the ability to nominate somebody to be on the board, and several of you have members. Commissioner Leonard and Commissioner Saltzman at least have members they've nominated on there. And that by expanding the size of the board, we would make it so that there wouldn't be a majority of council appointees. Like there are 9 members right now, so if all 5 of you had somebody on there, it would be all, you know, a majority of political appointees. So we're going to keep pushing for the expansion to 11 members or 13. The job of the CRC includes hearing appeals, was mentioned. And I don't know how many people realize this, but the CRC only heard 1 appeal in all of 2008. We're hoping that they will hear more appeals this year. As I mentioned last time I testified before council, Director Baptista has agreed to put the appeal forms in with the letters that come back from Internal Affairs with the outcome of the cases, so we're hoping to see more appeals come up this year. And just another kind of technicality about the difference between this board and other boards, which we have never understood, that other boards who are actually having nominees voted on by council this morning, their names of the individuals are listed in the council agenda, but the Citizen Review Committee just says members will be nominated this morning. And I'm not sure why this board is treated differently from other boards. So appreciate your time, and we look forward to seeing the new members participate in the oversight system and, of course, the changes that Ms. Luna Firebaugh recommended, and we're working with the CRC and the IPR on helping make sure that independent investigations will be part of that, and hoping that perhaps Ms. Silver's time on the Board of Independent Investigators will help her design a way for the CRC and the IPR to conduct its own independent investigations, which is, I think, one of the sticking points that where they are right now is how they're going to do that. So thank you again.
Handelman, I have 2 questions, if I could.
Sure.
First of all, just a comment. any recommendations for improving our appointment process for this or any other appointment of the city, I think we're all receptive to. So I think it would be particularly helpful if you had some comments that went to the structure, the procedures. If you have some constructive suggestions, I would love to see them in writing, email, letter. I don't want to make additional work for you, but I think this council is very receptive to ideas about how we can improve our appointment process. The question before us today, though, is two reappointments and two new appointments. So I'm just going to make sure I understand your testimony. Do you have any cause to believe that any of the applicants are unfit for this service?
No, I don't. And the two members, I didn't mention the two members who are being reappointed have been doing a relatively neutral job for people who are former law enforcement employees. And I think that we should make that clear as an organization. We have concerns about how many members of the board have former law enforcement experience, but these two have shown neutrality over the years.
And my second question is, a selection committee was established. Again, you may have advice for us about how we can improve our appointment process, and I would welcome that. But do you have any reason to believe that the selection process, including the people who served, somehow did not discharge their duties properly?
Well, it's very difficult to say, Commissioner Fish. Thank you for asking, because the nominees, the list of applicants is not known to us, so we don't know how they sorted through them. We don't know who got left off or for what reason they got left off. So that process, maybe there's a good reason for doing that in private. Most of the meetings of the Citizen Review Committee are in public. But I have no way to know who was selected and who wasn't selected, and so I can't answer that question.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. I think those are very good questions, and thank you, Mr. Handelman, for all the work that you do as a volunteer and making sure that we keep an eye on everything. I have two things. I'd like a copy of your blacked out information to compare it with the information that I got, and I'd like to hear from the auditor's office why that information isn't public. And I am interested in why I have noted that in the past, that some appointments, the names are on the agenda and some are not. And so I'm interested in that. And so I also would like your feedback, maybe at a different time, as far as how we can improve the outreach process to underrepresented communities. As the commissioner in charge of both the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and the Office of Human Relations, I want to make sure that we are doing even better. Do you agree that this outreach process was thorough? In terms of the
outreach for getting the members on?
Yes.
I think they did a lot of work on it. I think that things will probably improve. They have a new outreach plan, and they're going to be hiring a new outreach coordinator in the next few weeks. And assuming that everything goes according to that plan, where they're going to have more chance to do outreach to more organizations and communities, that maybe next time there'll be even broader outreach into communities underrepresented and perhaps those communities who have most interaction with police and would have most to say about this issue.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you. Yeah, I was wondering, can I submit my written question into the public record?
All you have to do is give it to our council clerk, Carla.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else signed up to testify?
That's all who signed up.
Did you want to hear from the auditor now or later, Commissioner Fritz, on the blackout?
I think that it would be nice to have that on the record. Just real
so
briefly.
Or
anybody.
I took this position on in June, and this is my first CRC recruitment. So if there was any differences in the redacted copies that you received and Mr. Handelman received, it was clearly an administrative error, and I'd be happy to correct it.
Why do we black out previous
information? Oh, personal information, birth dates, disabilities, social security numbers. I mean, driver's license numbers.
Previous employment?
That's curious. I don't know. I'll look at it.
Okay, thank you very much for checking into that.
All right, unless there's additional council discussion or questions, Carla, will you please call the roll?
Fish?
This is one of our most important functions, which is to appoint citizens to administrative bodies that help us do our work. And we are fortunate as a community to have so much talent to draw upon, but ultimately it comes down to service. And when people sign up to do this work, it is thankless work, it is time-consuming, it often gets under-recognized, but it helps move our city forward. So I want to specifically thank all four applicants for their service now and in the future to our city, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Fritz.
Thank you to those who have volunteered and who serve, and also to those who are on the selection committee. That's also part of the process. As I said, the Office of Human Relations is going to be intimately involved in the work of this group with the Racial Profiling Committee now resting in Human Relations. So I will look forward to working to improve relationships between our police officers and the communities that they serve. Aye.
Leonard?
I join with the comments made by my colleagues, but I want to, and I appreciate